You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, and happy... Whew, is it just Tuesday? I don't know. Happy Tuesday to each and every one of you across the beautiful state of Wisconsin and beyond. It's a toasty one in Wisconsin. Hope you're staying cool. Don't worry. We'll get it heated up here on the radio. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a jam-packed show for you this afternoon. We're going to be joined by Mayor Cavalier Johnson. We're going to be joined by State Senator Dora Drake. We even have Attorney General Josh Call, super excited. He just won a massive case today. We're going to talk about that with the AG. And we've got a great guest to kick things off this afternoon. You're going to have to hang on just one second before I introduce him. We do want to break some news, as we are wont to do here on the Maggie Dawn Show. You had, again, a public official getting arrested in a kerfuffle with ICE agents. New York City comptroller Brad Lander was arrested at an ICE court hearing or in a federal courthouse. I haven't been quite able to parse everything out. That happened early this morning. Trump making good on his threats to blue cities and local officials. And, of course, in the Mideast, the tensions between Iran and Israel, Israel's attacks ongoing against Iran. Where does this lead? What comes next? Does the U.S. have a role? I'm not exactly sure. Donald Trump is conducting foreign policy via social media. I don't get it. It's strange indeed. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. But right now, I'm super excited to bring on a candidate for the U.S. Senate, not a candidate here in Wisconsin, a candidate in Iowa for the U.S. Senate. He is going to take on U.S. Senator Joni Ernst. Yeah, that Joni Ernst. And in case you forgot who this is Iowa Senator Joni Ernst. Let's take a listen to what she said to her constituents just a couple weeks ago who are expressing concerns about the cuts to Medicaid, Medicare, emergency food assistance, and basically everything that helps working Americans keep their heads above water in Donald Trump's big, brutal bill designed to give tax cuts to billionaires while taking food out of the mouths of babes. Take a listen.
Well, we all are going to die.
For those that would like to see eternal and everlasting life, I encourage you to embrace my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
The non-apology apology, I guess a thing for the senator from the great state of Iowa. Joining us is current Iowa State Representative J.D. Schulten. He represents District 1, and he has announced that he is going to be running against Senator Ernst. Welcome to the program, J.D. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me, Maggie.
And we're going to get to baseball in due time. If you're watching this fine program on Civic Media's YouTube channel, you can see that Representative Schulten is joining us from a baseball diamond where he is in full uniform because he is playing this afternoon. Plenty of time to get to that. Insiders are saying that Senator Ernst may not, in fact, run for reelection. After you tell your constituents to go ahead, kick rocks and die, and then make fun of them because they are offended by your response with more offensive nonsense that does nothing to speak to the impact on regular working families in Iowa and places like Wisconsin. Yeah, I'd probably tell Senator Ernst that she might as well hang the cleats up, as it were, because she's toast. J.D., what's your message to Senator Ernst after what can be just termed as shocking language?
I mean, it was just all unnecessary. It was interesting because I wasn't planning on jumping in the race this early, and then I was debating about it, and then the town hall happened as I was going to a funeral for a family friend that Senator Harkin, who used to have that seat, was attending. And it was just at the funeral where you're thinking about life, think about what you need to be doing. And it felt like a calling. And then the next day when she doubled down with that very disrespectful, quote unquote, apology, that's when I was like, game on. And so we launched on that Monday already because we got in the race. We've moved the needle They said they moved it from a safe Republican seat to a lean Republican seat. It's just a start, and just very excited about our campaign.
Yeah, I, you're referring to the crystal ball. These are sort of election prognosticators. Wonk, again, had declared this Senate race in Iowa coming up in 26 to be safe. Now it's, likely Republican. JD, as I was reading up on Iowa internal politics, you are seen largely as a guy that can win contested elections against Republicans, and you're a Democrat that brings what I'm going to call common sense government reform as well as common sense values back to politics. Expand on that. Why do you think you can beat the senator or whomever the Republicans may put up in 26?
So I've ran two congressional races in a district that Trump won by 27, so very uphill battles. We outperformed the top of the ticket in both of those races and in both of my state house races. So I currently represent a seat that Trump won in the state house, and so I've overperformed every time. In 2018, we took a district Trump won by 27 and moved the needle 24 points. And so right now I'm the only Democrat in 42 counties in Northwest and North Central Iowa. And I like to consider myself a blueberry in a bowl of tomato soup.
A blueberry in a bowl of tomato soup. JD, I may have to use that one myself. That's a good one. Folks, we're talking with JD Scholten. He is currently a state representative in the great state of Iowa. He has declared his candidacy for Senate, U.S. Senate, going to run against Joni Ernst or whomever else the MAG has come up with in that race. JD, I think, there are parallels that I can feel and see between the great state of Iowa and, of course, Wisconsin. One being that the states themselves are often viewed as indicators of the national consciousness. Of course, looking to the Iowa caucuses in the primaries, the entire political center of the universe becomes Iowa for a period of time. Wisconsin remains sort of the bellwether for those upper Midwest swing states. I see also great connections and similarities in the hardworking basic core values of decency, respect, and hard work between Iowans and Wisconsinites. Do you think Democrats such as yourself can defeat these multi-term Senate Republicans in a state like Iowa or here in Wisconsin in the case of Ron Johnson? And by the way, Ron Johnson also says offensive things all the time. So there's that parallel as well.
I'm well aware of Ron Johnson, unfortunately.
Sorry about that.
Well, I'm jealous of Wisconsin. I think Iowa has their backs against the wall for Democrats right now. We are geographically between South Dakota, Nebraska, and Wisconsin. I think politically, that's where we're at as well. And so 2026 is a big year for us. And it's, to me, like in a state like Wisconsin, a wave could get you in as a Democrat. In Iowa, we need a little bit more right now. And so that's why our grassroots campaign was so effective in 2018. We're going to bring that statewide now. And that's why a lot of the national forecasters, a lot of the local folks all think that, hey, this might be ripe for an upset if we do the campaign. I bought a used Winnebago RV in 2018 and just went nonstop. We have to fundraise now to bring that back. So if anybody wants to go to shortenforiowa.com, more than happy to take all the help we can get.
Yeah, let's plug that website one more time. That's Scholten 4. Is it F-O-R or the number 4? Scholten, F-O-R, Iowa.com. That's JD's new website for his campaign. Let's talk a little bit. Let's have a little bit of fun. It's summertime. The baseball season is in full, pun intended, swing here. You yourself are a tall guy pitcher. My dad is a tall guy pitcher with lots of not hard throws, but all kinds of finesse pitches. You're one of the only sitting legislators that has also played a professional game of baseball. Tell us about the day that happened, JD, because I was blown away. Talk about multitasking, my friend.
Yeah, July 6th of last year. So after my two congressional runs, I want to spend more time. And I know Wisconsin has good town team baseball. So does Minnesota. And my folks live up in the Minnesota. And so I played up there. And I was 9-0 when I got the call. I've been waiting for this call for 4 years. And at about 1, one time a summer, a team like the Sioux City Explorers need a pitcher just to go out there and throw innings, just throw strikes. They don't care how hard you get hit, whatever. And they, I stepped in because they had a pitcher get hurt on 3 hours notice. And I went 6 2/3, threw 100 pitches, only gave up 2 runs, got the win. And they asked me to come back the next game in 5 days. We're up here in Fargo, and I pitched even better that day. And so I stood in the rotation the rest of the year. And because I'm the only state legislator to play professional baseball at the same time and the oldest person in league history to get a win, my jersey is in the National Baseball Hall of Fame.
Oh, that is so cool. So in case you missed any of that, last year, Representative Scholten, while he was a sitting legislator in the Iowa House of Representatives, was also a baseball player. He plays in independent baseball leagues, those community leagues like the Milkman that we've got here in southeastern Wisconsin, just like the Lake Country Dachshunds. Yep, that's the league that JD plays in. And he got a call up to pitch a game while he was, you know, attending to his legislative duties, and did both in one day. And not only that, 6 2/3, 100 pitches, scoreless. That is good quality.
2 runs.
Scoreless. I'll be fair. Two runs.
It was against the Milkman, so I apologize for your listeners.
I was getting there, but you had quite an outing, 100 pitches. My dad still gripes when I go to baseball games with him about the way that pitching has evolved in the major leagues, that guys just don't get to finish baseball games. In fact, I had an amazing discussion at the last Brewers game I was at with another fan about the beast that is CeCe Sabathia and the fact that this guy would used to pitch complete games. He was the only one I could think of sort of from the Brewers in the last decade or so. How many innings do you usually go, and what's your go-to pitch, JD?
Because things are different now, it's 5-6 innings for me, but we have a great bullpen, so then I let them take over. And they throw a lot harder than me, so it's a nice contrast. But I'm a sinker-slider guy, 6-6. I got a three-quarters arm angle. So that's my bread and butter.
JD, I'm going to put on my bucket list, see JD Scholten pitch game. So let me know, sir, when you are in town to play the Milkman again, and I will make sure my butt is in the chair. I might not be rooting for you, but I certainly want you to have a good outing. Do you mind if I tell folks how old you are, JD?
Not at all.
You keep doing it at 45. Are you still 44, 45 now?
45
years old. Pitching in the pros and legislating like a pro for the great people of the state of Iowa. I look forward to talking to you again sometime, JD, if you got time.
Absolutely. This is a pleasure.
It's all my pleasure. And folks, we've got Attorney General Josh Call up next. A landmark lawsuit, big win for the Attorney General. We discuss it next. That bit of breaking news right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, big news here in Wisconsin today. Attorney General Josh Call had sued over the lame duck legislation adopted after Republicans had Scott Walker booted out of the State House. They decided, what was good for Scott Walker, that's no longer good for Tony Evers and Attorney General Josh Call. We're going to pass some legislation to limit the powers of both the governor and the attorney general. And as we do in Wisconsin, litigation ensued. Well, we finally have a resolution in the attorney general's lawsuit today in favor, a unanimous Supreme Court decision coming down today in favor of the attorney general. We're very pleased to have him with us today. General Call, thanks for making time for us and congratulations on the big win.
Thank you, and thank you, Maggie, for having me on the program.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So this is, like, I call it the saga of the lame duck, both legislation and litigation. This goes back. Set the stage for folks, and what was your particular lawsuit about? So what was the historical context? How did we get here, and what was your particular case challenging?
Yeah, well, this issue has been going on now for about 6.5 years in, late 2018, after Governor Evers and I were elected, but before we first took office, the legislature rushed into a special session and passed some lame duck legislation that undermined the powers of our office. And this issue has been in the courts in various ways now for quite some time. There was an original case where the court struck down some aspects of what the legislature had passed, but upheld others. And on one of the really significant provisions, which limits our ability to resolve cases or requires us in certain instances to go to the Joint Finance Committee to get approval, on that one, the court said, well, we're not going to strike this down entirely because there might be some constitutional applications. So we went back to court. We filed one challenging some major categories of cases, including what are called civil enforcement actions that we have the authority to bring, like environmental protection cases or consumer protection cases. We finally got a ruling from the Supreme Court, and it was unanimous that what the legislature did with this provision is unconstitutional, which means we can get back to efficiently resolving these cases without having to go through the process of having the legislature weigh in.
And what are some of those cases that have been sort of in effect held in limbo that you are looking forward to trying to bring to a resolution swiftly now that this question of law has been settled unanimously by the Wisconsin Supreme Court?
Yeah, it's any case where we have brought a lawsuit in court regarding, for example, environmental protection, consumer protection, where we're bringing a civil action either because we've got the authority at the Department of Justice or a state agency has authorized us to bring that suit. And so we had a process in place. It was not serving much purpose, frankly. We would send things over and the legislature would eventually approve it. But this will allow the process to go more efficiently. We won't have to go through the legislative process. We won't have litigants concerned about what that might mean for resolution. So a number of cases moving forward now won't have to go through that. And what I would also note here is this is a unanimous decision from this court. We also got a unanimous decision in a high-profile case back in February involving the effort from the Senate to fire Megan Wolf.
Yes.
And I highlight that because there's a lot of discussion about, the court and whether it's what the divide is. And, a lot of people think about it as a 4-3 court. But on this issue and another really significant one, earlier this year, the court ruled unanimously. And so I think that sends a strong signal that this was clearly unconstitutional. It's too bad we've had to fight for as long as we have to get this ruling. But I'm really glad we have finally gotten this victory.
Yeah. And for folks that don't understand how significant of an impediment this was, is there a good case that stands as an example that really got bogged down or that the opposing party felt uncomfortable moving forward because the resolution of the case was going to be subject to this enhanced review on the legislative side?
Well, I don't want to talk about specific cases, but I can talk generally about how this impacts the process, because just imagine you're in a litigation and you've got the State Department of Justice saying, we want to resolve this case. Historically, what we could do and what we will be able to do going forward is say, this is the offer for resolving the case, and that is what will resolve it. But with this joint finance review process in place, the offers that we made weren't final. They were contingent on the Joint Finance Committee approving. So you're asking the other side in the case to sign up for an agreement that they're not certain is going to be approved by the Finance Committee. Then instead of resolving it and moving forward to go to court, you've got to go through this legislative committee process. And you can imagine that itself can be something that's of concern to somebody trying to resolve a case. Then we've got to send something over. We've got to wait for the legislative committee to approve it. And that takes time. And so if you've got a case where you've got some sort of environmental violation and we want to resolve it and begin the process of implementing remediation so we can get that cleaned up, we don't want to delay that process. We want it to move quickly. But by having this extra review built in, it can slow the process down. So we are now getting rid of that. More importantly, though, or at least also important, we're vindicating a critical principle here, which is our separation of powers. We have separate powers for different parts of government. And one of the principles is that the legislature, which is making the laws, shouldn't also be enforcing the laws. And this is kind of a microcosm of what we see going on at the federal level with the Trump administration trying to run over separation of powers, too.
As I often like to say, Wisconsin is a microcosm for the country. We are the center of the political universe. That is Attorney General Josh Call logging a big win, a unanimous decision from the Wisconsin Supreme Court in Attorney General Call's favor, protecting his powers to bring about swift and efficient resolutions to litigation on behalf of all Wisconsin residents and taxpayers. Thank you, General Call. Can't wait to talk to you soon about your other actions against the Trump administration to protect Wisconsinites. We'll be back with more and Cavalier Johnson here on the Civic Media Radio Network after these brief messages. Welcome back. Happy Tuesday, everybody. I hope your afternoon is going well. My name's Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to Wisconsin's Attorney General Josh Call for joining us in the last segment to talk about his big win. We've got another one of my, I'll just say it, favorite elected officials from the state of Wisconsin. This one, my very own mayor, City of Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, Mr. Mayor.
Maggie, I am happy to be back with you.
Yeah, we finally got some summer-type weather going on here. Where's it been?
Look, I don't know, but I can tell you my kids are happy that it's here. They've been clamoring for it for a little bit.
Absolutely. Get those sprinklers going. That was my activity when I was a kid in the city in the summer to cool off. No in-ground pools where I grew up, I'm just saying. let's talk a little bit about what has transpired over the last week. Donald Trump has always had it in for blue cities and especially Democratic mayors, Democratic states. That rhetoric has only accelerated over the last week and a half. Let's take a listen. This is Donald Trump within the last couple of days talking about targeting Democratic cities. I don't know how else to put it.
I want them to focus on the cities because the cities are where you really have what's called sanctuary cities, and that's where the people are. I look at New York, I look at Chicago. I mean, you got a really bad governor in Chicago and a bad mayor, but the governor's probably the worst in the country, Pritzker. But I look at how that city has been overrun by criminals and, you know, New York and L.A., look at L.A. L.A., those people weren't from L.A., they weren't from California, most of those people, many of those people. And, yeah, that's the focus. Biden allowed 21 million people to come into our country.
And he goes on, just insert more nonsense at the end of that blathering. And even in the wake of the assassinations in Minnesota this weekend, Donald Trump late on Sunday posting on social media what can only be described as an unhinged rant, sort of doubling down on this idea of targeting Democratic cities. As a sitting Dem mayor of a large Midwestern city, Mr. Johnson, what's going through your head as you're hearing all this from the president?
Well, I mean, it's typical Donald Trump, and I'm sorry to like be, you know, exasperated when I'm answering the question. It's not you. It's just the exhaustion that all of us collectively said we were not going to be in this administration, this, you know, Trump 2.0 administration. But unfortunately, here we are again, just because that's what he does. That's what he does. I mean, it's you know, create a problem and then say that you fix the problem. You know, he's saying that, you know, we're going to go in and fix the cities and make them safe again and make them clean again, because he likes to put again after every, you know, thing that he says for whatever reason. But then, like, when he leaves, it's the same way that it was, you know. And then the other thing too here is, like, I don't even think he actually believes it. I think he's playing, you know, a tough guy on TV when he's behind the seal of the president, unfortunately. Why do I say that? I say that because, look, before the RNC of Milwaukee, or during the RNC of Milwaukee, rather, he actually called me and said how great the city was and how remarkable the public safety was doing, you know, and all those things. And Milwaukee was great. Milwaukee was excellent. That's what he told me directly, which is a far cry from when he, you know, puts on the mask and gets behind, you know, the seal or on the campaign trail and says that, you know, Milwaukee's a horrible city. So I think some of it is just, you know, him playing a game. But that's the danger in this, though. Like, you're supposed to be able to believe what your elected officials say, especially when that elected official is the president of the United States.
Yeah, it is a dangerous game. And I wanted to ask you, Mr. Mayor, this additional question about this, and I share your exasperation. I hate having to ask these same things because, you know, if the guy would stand up and lead and try to unify, no. We wouldn't have to have these kinds of conversations. One of the things that concerns me about this moment is that, as many political scientists and historians will note, as rhetoric that is dehumanizing about people or people in particular places, as that dehumanizing rhetoric increases, so do incidents of political violence. Because to the extent mm-hmm. that you can see and believe that your political opposition is inhuman, it is much easier to do things that you would have previously considered to be far beyond the pale. And so as Donald Trump says these things, I don't think he thinks Milwaukeeans or Chicagoans or New Yorkers believe what he's saying. I think he's trying to create a permission structure where things like deployment of the National Guard and active duty Marines is acceptable by his base. When you look at how we move forward and how we deal with this as a political matter, how do we counter that as Milwaukeeans or as Wisconsinites, not even blue and red, if we want to come together and find some place of unity to say to this administration, that's not an okay way to conduct business because it is so abnormal, it is such an abrogation of leadership. What do you think the pathway forward to do that might be?
I think a couple of things. And you're right, I mean, about his rhetoric. Now, we all had, you know, conversations about toning down the political rhetoric in light of the assassination attempts on his life, right? And so it's really, really unfortunate that on his part, on the president's part, that behavior has just continued to happen. I mean, he's gone on to say not just, you know, inhumane things about other people, and not just other people, fellow Americans, right? Fellow countrymen and fellow countrywomen. He's called people vermin. You know, he says that, you know, the media is fake. I remember some of his rallies when he was first running for president saying, oh, you know, if somebody like that were to come in a place like here, they'd be, you know, they'd have to leave out on a stretcher. He, you know, calls places like ours, you know, horrible cities where people live. He's said that people in this country are the enemy within, all of these things. And so, yeah, that's dehumanizing. And yeah, it takes away, I think, inhibitions from people who might act on, you know, some of their thoughts that probably otherwise would not if we had somebody in the White House who was actually a leader, actually a uniter, actually bringing people together. But I think the way that we address it in this moment is by not giving him what he wants, because what he wants more than anything at all, is to be able to press that button, is to be able to mobilize, you know, and federalize the armed forces to be able to go after fellow American citizens, especially in blue cities like ours. So we can't give him what he wants. That's why I was so proud this past Saturday when you know, there were the No Kings protests all across the United States, including here in Milwaukee. You know, thousands and thousands of people showing up and exercising their First Amendment rights under the Constitution. And doing it in a peaceful way. There was no reason at all for him to even think about trying to mobilize, you know, the National Guard or send in, you know, troops to this blue city, to Milwaukee or even to Madison, because of the way that we conducted ourselves exercising our First Amendment rights. That is how we get around it. That's how we get through it, rather, is by doing it peacefully. And look, the First Amendment is the first one for a reason. You have the right to protest government. You have the right to protest when elected officials are beyond the scope, as the president has been. That, I think, is far, far more American than what the president's actions and words have been.
Folks, this is Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson talking with us here at the Maggie Dawn Show. You brought up the No Kings rallies across the nation, upwards of 6+ million, some estimates putting it closer to 10 million. Historians and many that study political movements point to a particular percentage as the tipping point or an indicator of whether or not the movement is really about to effectuate regime change. And that percentage is 3.5%. We don't need to go into the theorists that came up with this, but that is around 11 million people in the United States. And we know from research just released today from a Harvard historian that we have seen well more than 11 million people over just these beginning months of Trump's second administration show up repeatedly. And that in addition to just the raw numbers of people, the numbers of protests and the places that they are happening, including smaller cities, smaller communities in rural areas and more redder districts and congressional districts, that we are approaching potentially a tipping point. Mr. Mayor, do you think that we are at that tipping point where the potential impacts of this big, brutal bill, the Senate markup coming down today, the cuts to Medicaid by the Senate, even more grave than what the House adopted, do you think we may be reaching that tipping point?
Yeah, I mean, if you were not in favor of what the House passed, which were the president's priorities, right? It's Republicans that control the House of Representatives, then you're really, really going to hate what the Senate passed or is considering, because it's, you know, even more harsh than what the House of Representatives put forward before. And this is the thing that I think people that voted for the president this go around, this is what I think that they don't understand, that they did not get, right? When he's talking about, you know, doing some things, I think, you know, some of us can agree on in terms of working to make sure that government is more efficient, right? Everybody wants it to be more efficient. We don't want to waste money. But when it's like full scale, take not just a butcher knife, but a chainsaw, as you saw Elon Musk wielding at the CPAC, to government and to the services, it doesn't just affect the blue cities that the president talks about and likes to villainize. It affects you too. You think when a cut to SNAP happens, it affects just, you know, poor black people or Latino people? No, it affects poor white people too. When folks get kicked off of health insurance in Wisconsin, some 63,000 people getting kicked off, that's not all going to be felt in the city of Milwaukee. That's going to be felt in communities all across the state, including in counties and communities across Wisconsin that need that assistance. I was just the other day with an organization called Community Smiles, and they operate in Waukesha, and they serve families with children who have dental needs that don't have health insurance. And I bring this up only because there is a connection with some of the actions of the president here. I bring it up because they told me, and I was astounded by this, that their clientele, many of them come from Milwaukee, and that I could see. But he said that they get so many other clients from not just the core counties in southeastern Wisconsin. They get clientele that comes to them in Waukesha from 14 other counties around southeast Wisconsin, in the southeast region of the state. That says that in those communities, there are people who live in poverty and need assistance, and this president is hurting those people too. So, yes, I do think we're getting to that tipping point where people are starting to realize that, hey, yes, I voted for him because I wanted him to deport the criminals, not to deport, you know, this, you know, teacher's aide in Milwaukee Public Schools who is now in El Salvador with her twins. That's a problem.
Yeah. Folks, that is Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson. Thank you so much, sir, for spending some of your Tuesday afternoon. I hope your girls are enjoying the summertime weather and stay cool, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thanks, Maggie.
Good to talk with the mayor always. When we come back, we've got some breaking news coming out of Janesville. It appears that there may have been folks killed in a shooting happening in Janesville. We've got details coming in. That breaking news I'll have for you on the other side. Keep it locked. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Go back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson for spending some time with us this Tuesday afternoon. We have some breaking news from close to home. In Janesville, three adults have been apparently found dead with gunshot wounds at an apartment complex Tuesday morning. A fourth adult was found critically injured. Janesville police officers reported to the scene for a report of a, quote, family problem, which was then followed by a 911 call. The injured person was taken to Mercy Hospital by Janesville fire paramedics with life-threatening injuries. The shots were reported at around 11:05 a.m. in the 2600 block of North Pontiac Drive at the Aspen Square Apartments. Police said at a press conference Tuesday afternoon there was no credible threat to the community. Again, importantly for you and everyone in the Janesville area, there is no credible threat to the community, but yet another incident of gun violence taking lives. This one, again, very close to home. We have an other breaking news this hour that Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem has been transported by ambulance to a D.C. area hospital. No information yet about what may have occurred, what required for her to go to the hospital. Again, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem has been transported just moments ago, reporting within the last 30 minutes or so, has been transported to a D.C. metro area hospital. A spokesperson for Noem issued the following statement. Quote, Secretary Noem had an allergic reaction today. She was transported to the hospital out of an abundance of caution. She is alert, talking to her security detail, and recovering. I'm glad to hear that. I don't want people having health issues. So much happening these days. Also, I want to update the story that we led with this hour. I shared with you that New York City mayoral candidate, that primary is next week. New York City mayoral candidate and current comptroller Brad Lander was arrested by federal officials Tuesday early afternoon, late morning. He has now been released from federal custody as of this afternoon. New York City comptroller and mayoral candidate Brad Lander released from federal custody. He was apparently had been monitoring action in the immigration court in downtown New York this week, had been walking along migrants as they exited the building. Apparently, again, someone that he was walking with or escorting was getting then picked up by ICE agents, and an altercation occurred, resulting in Mr. Lander's arrest. That New York City mayoral primary field, it's a little packed. One to watch what happens in the New York City mayor's race, because, of course, you've got Andrew Cuomo running as well. Another middle-aged, disgraced politician rising from the ashes like a phoenix after various allegations of sexual impropriety. I just wish that wouldn't happen anymore. Either the predicate allegations or the creepy guys that were in office coming back again. No. Stay out of the limelight. The reason that we wanted to have the mayor on is that, again, I think the rhetoric coming from the Trump administration and from Donald Trump itself is accelerating. It is gaining in its unhingedness, I think would be a fair way to put it. I didn't want to take our time with the mayor, but I do want to take a moment to read a portion of what Donald Trump put out on social media on Sunday night. Again, this is after a targeted list of attempted political assassinations and two successful political assassinations in Minnesota over the weekend. So that's what has happened, and Donald Trump chooses to tweet this out, or Truth Social, or whatever he used. ICE officers are ordered herewith by notice of this truth, all caps, to do all in their power to achieve the very important goal of delivering the single mass deportation, the largest mass deportation program in history. In order to achieve this, we must expand efforts to detain and deport illegal aliens in America's largest cities, such as L.A., Chicago, and New York, where millions upon millions of illegal aliens reside. These and such other cities are the core of the Democrat power center, where they cheat in elections and grow the welfare state, blah, 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 blah. So that's what it's about. It's actually, he said it right there. This isn't about targeting the worst of the worst people who are here illegally, because they're all over the country. It's about targeting Democrats. It's about trying to incite violence. And remember the big brutal bill. Why are we cutting Medicaid, which is overwhelmingly popular with both Democrats and Republicans, overwhelmingly supports millions of Americans, 71 million Americans get their health care from Medicaid? What does it do in addition to the big tax cuts for the billionaires and the mega corporations? Oh, yeah, we're defunding Medicaid to the tune of nearly $1 trillion, ripping life-saving healthcare away from people to pay for the mass roundup and deportation of people who work full-time jobs, who are your neighbors, your friends that live in your communities, whose kids are citizens. That's who he's rounding up. When we come back, we'll be joined by State Senator Dora Drake. Where do the state's budget negotiations stand? What's coming up for our Juneteenth celebrations here in Wisconsin? We discuss with the state senator when we come back. My name's Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.